Founder oath to the phenomenon of bilocation and the detailed story of the stigmatization. Padre Pio Under Investigation is at the online store at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Radio for Catholic and other Christians. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
With the New York Times in one hand and the Catechism of the Catholic Church in the other, Al Cresta is ready for conversations of consequence.
Democrats have literally fled the state.
Head out on the highway.
The Egyptian president, Hosni Mubarak, has finally stepped down.
Walk like an Egyptian.
Planned Parenthood is the largest abortion provider in America. Planned Parenthood is the largest recipient of federal funding under Title X.
I'm a fool to do your dirty work.
Broadcasting from the studios of Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and taking a closer Catholic look at current events, issues, and ideas. This is Cresta in the Afternoon.
Great question. That is a really interesting question.
You asked another interesting question.
You just asked the $64,000 question.
Beautiful.
Okay, let's do it.
And a very good afternoon to you. I'm Al Cresta. We are here in Chicago at the Religious Book and Trade Exhibit and enjoying our time here talking to many of the publishers and writers and spending some time with interviews. And coming up in today's broadcast, let me tell you where we're heading. We're going to be spending time with Tom McCluskey in the second hour of the program. There is a proposed bill that would effectively ban U.S. Catholic adoption agencies. Tom was with the Family Research Council. We will take a look at the dangers behind this bill. Also, we'll spend time with Rob Muse, attorney with the Thomas More Law Center. He has just argued a case in the appeals court dealing with the individual mandate in the Obama health care plan. And this is, there are many legal avenues at responding to and challenging the Obama health care package. One area of concern is to claim that its mandate that individuals must purchase health care is itself unconstitutional. Rob will lay out for us the argument that he's been making in appeals court. Also with us today, Raymond D'Souza, apologist, founder and director of St. Gabriel Communications, Australia's first international outreach promoting Catholic apologetics. He is chairman of the National Evangelization Office at the National Shrine of the Sacred Heart of Jesus in the United States, and you know him from his hosting on EWTN. I'm going to talk a little bit about the broad issues facing Catholic apologetics and evangelization. And there are all kinds of cultural forces that are doing their best to discredit and undermine. Some of them are consciously doing it. Sometimes they're just social processes which seem to delegitimate Christian truth claims. We'll talk to Raymond about how he combats these and what we can all do to render Jesus more immediate and visible among us. So that's coming up in this next hour of Cresta in the Afternoon. We're also joined by Robert Riley, Senior Fellow at the American Foreign Policy Council. Bob has joined us a few times before, talking about the closing of the Muslim mind, how intellectual suicide created the modern Islamist crisis. Now, with the killing of Osama bin Laden, it's good for us to come back and rethink the intellectual influences on bin Laden. Many of these go back, believe it or not, they go back to critical moments in Islamic history. And we will talk about some of the conflicts, the belittling of reason that has been part of Islamic history, and how that's influenced Islamic culture. So that's all coming up in this hour of Cresta in the Afternoon. But first, let's make sure we hit the headlines with Nick Tom.
Thank you very much, Al, and welcome everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News. It is Thursday, June 2nd, the feast of Saints Marcellinus and Peter. Today's news is brought to you in part by Siena Communication at ProLifeCatholic.com. It is now official. Former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney is running for president. He said today in a speech in New Hampshire that it is time for people to vote out President Obama.
No, Mr. President, you've had your chance. We, the people on this farm and citizens across the country, are the ones who are just getting started.
Romney made it official during a campaign event on a farm in New Hampshire. Romney went right after President Obama, saying the U.S. is in peril. He said the president has failed America. The 64-year-old Romney was an unsuccessful presidential candidate back in 2008. A new report by the United Nations has found both the Libyan government, led by dictator Muammar Gaddafi, and opposition forces guilty of war crimes and crimes against humanity. The commission was set up by the UN Human Rights Council in February to look into human rights abuses in the North African country, still suffering a humanitarian crisis after 5 months of war. Natalie Carney has more from the UN headquarters in New York.
The report concluded that crimes, including murder, imprisonment, torture, and enforced disappearance by Libyan government forces, did constitute as war crimes and crimes against humanity. The panel also found acts by opposition forces that would constitute as war crimes, including torture and cruel treatment of detainees and migrant workers thought to be mercenaries. This report adds to the evidence already collected by lawyers at the International Criminal Court and comes after NATO's 28 member states agreed to extend their mandate in Libya for 90 days. Natalie Carney at the United Nations in New York.
Archbishop Thomas Collins of Toronto plans to set up an ordinariate for Anglicans who wish to enter the Catholic Church and hopes to have the first parish opening by the end of this year. Father William Foote, who has been appointed by the Archbishop to prepare for the establishment of the ordinariate, told a group of interested Anglicans that individual instruction in the Catholic faith could begin this September, and those who made a personal commitment might be received into the Catholic Church during Advent. And now your fascinating fact of the day. Less than one patented invention in 100 makes any money for the inventor. Reporting for Ave Maria Radio News, I'm Nick Tom.
Robert Riley is senior fellow at the American Foreign Policy Council. He's written for the Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, Reader's Digest, and National Review, and many other publications. He's former director of the Voice of America and has taught at the National Defense University, served in the White House and in the office of the Secretary of Defense. He's a member of the board of the Middle East Media Research Institute and has written, I think, in a wonderfully insightful book called The Closing of the Muslim Mind, How Intellectual Suicide Created the Modern Islamist Crisis. And, Bob, it's good to have you back. Thanks.
Al, it's wonderful to be back with you. Thank you for having me.
I wanted to focus our conversation today on this crisis in Muslim history, going back to the 9th, 10th, 11th centuries, where we find that decisions were made which ended up belittling the role of reason in Muslim life and the belittling or even eliminating the robust concept of free will. Set it up for us, would you? Who were the sides on this? What were the groups and what were they fighting?
Well, Al, as you know, from the closing of the Muslim mind, I think the 9th century in Baghdad was the scene for one of the greatest human dramas in history.
Yeah.
Within Islam, over who God is and what his relationship to reason is. This was the period that Pope Benedict XVI refers to in the great Regensburg lecture as the Hellenization of Islam.
Right.
When it became acquainted with Plato and Aristotle and tried to assimilate that thinking into itself to see if it was compatible with Islamic revelation. And the great Caliph al-Ma'mun was the greatest sponsor of Greek philosophy in the history of Islam. And it looked as if Islam would follow the path of Christianity, really, in establishing the status of reason through the influence of Greek philosophy. But there was a huge reaction against this from what's called Asherism, which was the theological school that arose in opposition to the idea that God is reason. And they said, no, 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 God is pure will and power. He is not constricted even by his own word. You see, God is not logos. He's not the word.
So he's not even limited by his own character?
Or is that not stunning? You see, they say that he is incomprehensible. He is infinitely transcendent. And he is limited by nothing. And for you to say
not even his promises.
Not by his promises, not by any conception of justice. And for you to say so is an act of blasphemy, because otherwise he couldn't be impotent. He couldn't be omnipotent. And this plays into your reference to the problem with man's free will, because these same theologians said if anyone else is so much as potent, then God can't be omnipotent. Therefore, he causes everything. Yeah. Including man's actions. Therefore, you'd say, well, if he's going to punish man for his bad actions, how can he do that if he himself created the actions? And the answer would be, well, there you are applying a human conception of justice, which is totally inapplicable to this omnipotent God who is pure will, not reason. So don't apply the standards of reason to him. This is what the struggle was over, and it's why I say, as my central thesis in this book, that a deformed theology led to a dysfunctional culture, the dysfunctional culture that we see today in the Muslim world. Because in addition to those terrible consequences, it denied that natural law exists too. Even so simple a thing as gravity. You can't have gravity as a principle in nature that operates in any way independently of God, and it is he who makes the rock fall down, and next time he may make it fall up.
Yeah.
So every instant, every moment of phenomena is directly willed by God.
There was one fellow Dutch thinker who came up with a marvelous way to place to say this. He said, within this conception, all miracles are natural, and all nature is miraculous. So in the sense that, I mean, one thing about miracles is that we don't understand them, I mean, because they're supernatural. In this conception of the world, in this conception, there's no distinction between natural and supernatural. And therefore, the world retreats from you. It becomes inaccessible. You can't come to know it through your reason, because it's a product of a God who acts for no reasons, and therefore what he does is incomprehensible. So this is what the battle was over. Yeah, it was huge, deadly.
This has got to lead then to a lack of, eventually, a lack of interest in investigating the natural world.
I think you just put your finger on it. It's why science died in the Islamic world. And after what looked like a very promising start back there in the, say, 9th and 10th centuries, it fizzled out, and that's why it fizzled out. You can't go looking for natural laws when you are told at the level of your theology and revelation that they cannot exist.
Yeah.
And that to say that the rock falls because of gravity is an act of blasphemy.
Yeah. So the group that championed this position were the Asherites. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. Now,
and there's another
the name.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to say that the status of reason between the two groups, the group on the side of Caliph al-Mamun were called the Mu'tazilites, who embraced reason, and the Asherites were the ones who rejected it. Therefore, in terms of moral behavior and what you can know about morality and ethics through your reason, led one of the leading Mu'tazilites to say, quote, it is obligatory for you to carry out what accords with your reason, unquote. In other words, it's immoral to behave unreasonably.
Mm-hmm.
The Asherites countered by saying, quote, there is nothing obligatory by reason.
Wow.
Or no obligations flow from reason, but only from revelation. So your reason can't tell you anything about whether what you are considering doing is good or evil. Nothing. You can't know anything through your reason about that. Only through the revelation in Sharia. It's radical. It's
so
extraordinarily radical.
And yet, this became perceived as the middle way, because you had the school of Hanbali, the Hanbalites, on even further to the right. And who are they?
Well, the Ibn Hanbal was the founder of one of the four Sunni legal schools, and that was the era in which he lived. And under the Mu'tazilites, he was in prison because he refused to admit the doctrine that the Quran had been created in time. And it is his teaching that is at the foundation of Saudi Arabia's way of Islam today. So if you want to know what Hanbalism looks like, just look at Saudi Arabia. That's what it's like. And he even objected to the Asherites using reason to destroy reason. I'm serious. That's how Asherism came to be known as the middle way, because he was even more anti-rational. And when he was interrogated, he would only answer by quoting from the Quran or the Hadith, or he wouldn't say anything, and he wouldn't eat a watermelon, because there was no instance in which it was known that Muhammad had eaten a watermelon. And
wow.
That if anyone had needed theology and philosophy, Muhammad would have introduced it. And so, since he didn't, you should dispense with these things. They're irreligious and lead to unbelief. And that's why, you know, if you want to, just take a look at Saudi Arabia if you want to know what that looks like in practice. The
wow.
most benighted form of Islam. And unfortunately, Al, thanks to the petrodollars, it's the variety of Islam that's being spread. Even in places in Southeast Asia, like Indonesia, where there was a far more benign, tolerant kind of Islam. Hanbalism and Wahhabism is totally intolerant, as you know, and they don't allow any other religion in Saudi Arabia, or a crucifix or a Bible, etc.
Yeah, it's amazing. Bob, hold it there. We'll come back. I want to ask you, who was Al-Ghazali? This is one of the most important intellectuals in the history of human thought. But I want to know what role he played in this conflict.
Cresta in the Afternoon is brought to you in part by Ciena, the Catholic mobile phone company. With Ciena, 5% of every voice plan goes to help the pro-life, pro-family efforts of Ave Maria Radio. Ciena uses a nationwide digital network, and our calling plans allow you to support the culture of life with every call. To learn more, the number is 877-474-3662, or on the web at prolifecatholic.com.
For 800 years, the Alexian brothers have served the sick, not as priests, but as Catholic brothers.
We're brothers because this is the life that God called us to.
In the struggle with alcohol or drugs or AIDS, the Alexian brothers are there.
We're looking for men who have the courage to live in vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. If a man is convinced that God has called him, then we have a spot for him.
If you feel a call to brother the world with the Alexians, call toll-free 1-800-556-0332.
This is Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life. 40 days after his resurrection, the Lord Jesus ascended into heaven. What was different on that day than when he was in heaven before coming to earth? The difference was that now he was in heaven in a human body and soul, the same human nature that you and I share. Jesus took our humanity to the heights of heaven, making it possible for us to go there too. The Ascension teaches the world the meaning and destiny of human life. We are called to be in the heights of heaven. That is why we can never permit human life to be thrown in the garbage by abortion and other atrocities. Jesus has taken human nature to the heights of heaven, the same human nature shared by every unborn child. This is Father Frank Pavone on Ave Maria Radio.
May Day 2011 was one for the ages. May Day is an annual secular feast day for the International Socialist and Communist Movement, which, as usual, took a noble cause, workers' rights, and perverted it into a call for central planning, collectivism, wealth redistribution, and, in the case of communists, outright abolition of property rights and basic civil liberties, including freedom of religion. One man who witnessed this perversion was a former laborer from Poland named Karol Wojtyła, who instead acknowledged St. Joseph the Worker, a May 1st commemoration established by Pope Pius XII as a corrective to the communist distortion. It is St. Joseph who offers a balanced ideal of workers' rights and human rights, with God, not without. As Karol Wojtyła could declare once he became Pope John Paul II, Joseph was no less than the guardian of the Redeemer. He was a worker, for sure, and he raised a carpenter's son, but his eyes were fixed foremost on the divine. The model of St. Joseph redeems every May Day. This May Day 2011, however, went further, with thanks to Pope John Paul II. The church calendar allowed for May Day 2011 to occur on Divine Mercy Sunday, which honors a humble Polish nun named Sister Faustina, canonized by John Paul II. Faustina's life was cut short in 1938. She urged an ocean of mercy. That message could not have been more poignant for Poland and beyond. Just 1 year after Faustina's death, Poland was invaded, occupied, and terrorized, first by murderous nationalist socialists, the Nazis, and then by murderous atheistic communists, the Soviets. Most fitting of all, this May Day 2011 had added profundity, as John Paul II, who wrote encyclicals rejecting excessive state intervention, was beatified. So how's that for May Day 2011? A unique trinity of St. Joseph, St. Faustina, and Blessed John Paul II. Now that's a May Day both redeeming and worth celebrating. For CatholicExchange.com and Ave Maria Radio, I'm Paul Kengor.
To you. I'm Al Cresta. My guest, Robert Riley, is the author of The Closing of the Muslim Mind, How Intellectual Suicide Created the Modern Islamist Crisis. If you believe that ideas have consequences, and ask yourself, well, what ideas have been consequential in this modern crisis with Islamism, then you want to pick up this book, The Closing of the Muslim Mind, because it traces the ideas splendidly and with great effect. Now, Bob, who is al-Ghazali?
Al-Ghazali is considered within Islam to be the second most important figure in it, next only to Muhammad himself. He's a titanic figure who, in the 10th and early 11th centuries, delivered the coup de grace to philosophy and reason within Sunni Islam. He is the one, in his book called The Incoherence of the Philosophers, who bashed Aristotle and Socrates and said these are illegitimate within Islam. He said philosophy has no truths of itself. Reason cannot attain certitude about anything. Therefore, what is it? It's just another religion, and one that is inimical to Islam. So he was the one who, because he was so influential, basically put the nail in the coffin.
So he was he was brilliant himself, wasn't he?
A brilliant man. There's no question about it. But he ended up espousing irrationality as the reflection of this God of pure will. I just read you a short thing from the revival of the religious sciences. Here he's talking about the mandatory pilgrimage, the Hajj, in Islam. He says, the pilgrimage is the most irrational thing in Islam. There we perform gestures and rites that are absolutely irrational. For this reason, the pilgrimage is the place where we can, better than in any other place, demonstrate our faith, because reason does not understand anything at all of it. And only faith makes us do those actions. Blind obedience to God is the best evidence of our Islam, unquote. See, a statement like that, Al, helps you understand why Abdullah, the Muslim name Abdullah, is so popular, and its literal translation is slave of God. You know, this helps us understand how foreign it is within Islam to have a relationship with God such as we are offered in Christianity, as his children, you know, as a familial, personal relationship. There was a reaction within Islam against this terrible teaching, and the Sufis developed a form of mysticism to compensate for it. But in its doctrines, it is, as I set forth here from Al-Ghazali, who is the most influential thinker in Sunni Islam, it's very stark. As Al-Ghazali said, we have an obligation to love God, but God cannot love us. God is perfect within himself, and should he love us, that would be an imperfection. So he doesn't. He may favor us or not favor us according to his will, and he acts for no reason, so we don't know what he's going to do. He may punish those who have obeyed him and reward those who didn't. And there's no gainsaying him in doing that.
So when we read in the first epistle of John that God is love, that is not something that translates to the God of Islam.
Only the Sufis would say that, and the Sufis are held in great suspicion and sometimes as heretics. But at the theological level, no, you cannot say that. So God is not love, but in the beginning of the Gospel of St. John, and those glorious words, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and all things were made through him. As you know, this is a Greek gospel, and the Word is logos, which
yes.
means speech or reason. So Christianity has this great revelation that is a break against any movement within it to denigrate reason to the extent that it has been within Islam. And as you know, in the Middle Ages, there were attempts to denigrate reason within Christianity. And St. John's Gospel protected us from that having great success, though it's at the basis of a great deal of Protestant thought. As you recall, Martin Luther's infamous statement that reason is the devil's whore. That's perfectly compatible with Al-Ghazali's thinking.
Now, he interests me because he also writes autobiographically. So we hear about his own struggles with faith and in his book Deliverance from Error.
Yeah.
And he demolishes reason, but he's then left without hope. He really is left in despair for a while.
Exactly.
And it's only through some kind of mystical experience that he eventually comes back to any faith at all.
That's
right.
Tell
us about that.
Well, the problem with that is that his mystical experience was esoteric and incommunicable. Therefore, what can it be the basis of? You know, in other words,
right.
In a way, Al-Ghazali presents Islam with a double whammy. He discredits reason, and then he moves into mysticism, which is esoteric and also, in a way, unreasonable, or at least beyond reason. So it by basing it in experience, it doesn't make it available to many.
So it doesn't become public evidence in any way.
Well, what Al-Ghazali, I think, is trying to do is throw everyone back upon the Quran. He devastates the entire landscape around the Quran and leaves only it standing, saying this is the only thing about which there is no doubt. As in the beginning of the second surah in the Quran, it says this is the book about which there is no doubt for those who know, or for those who are conscious of God, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So Al-Ghazali, therefore, is throwing you back upon that exclusively. And that certitude, therefore, is reached through this consciousness of God and through no other means. And therefore, reason is not a path to God because God is not logos.
Yeah, yeah. Now, let's just jump forward here. We'll do a big leapfrog up into the 20th century. How did this kind of thinking inform Sayyid Qutb, who was the intellectual father of Osama bin Laden?
Well, that's a very good question. You can trace the intellectual genealogy of these people back to Al-Ghazali, from Al-Ghazali to Ibn Taymiyyah, from Ibn Taymiyyah to Ibn Wahhab, the founder of Wahhabism in the 18th mm-hmm. century in Saudi Arabia. And if you read the writings of the Islamist ideologues, Maududi in Pakistan, Qutb in Egypt, they're grounded in these thinkers. That's what they draw upon. The founder of the Muslim Brotherhood, Hassan al-Banna,
mm-hmm.
had as his bedside reading Al-Ghazali.
Interesting. Wow.
So that's the intellectual genealogy. You know about this Cordova project in New York?
Yes.
From that imam who has been so controversial
this is the Ground Zero Mosque.
The Ground Zero Mosque
controversy.
I remember when the discussions of him began picking up, and he was asked what his intellectual genealogy is, and that's what he said. Al-Ghazali, Ibn Taymiyyah, and Ibn Wahhab. And when I read that, I just thought, good grief, this is the man who says he wants a dialogue when his own thinking is based upon the denigration of reason.
Yeah.
In other words, there's something that doesn't smell right here.
Now, Benedict XVI, in the Regensburg lecture, tries to get at this problem, and he's concerned about maintaining continuity between Christianity and Hellenization. How does that lecture provide an antidote to this stream of thinking that brings us to bin Laden?
Well, it's brilliant in its analysis, and I consider my book, The Closing of the Muslim Mind, sort of a footnote.
Mm-hmm.
A long footnote to the Regensburg lecture, because when the Holy Father speaks of the de-Hellenization of Islam, I tell the story of its Hellenization and then its de-Hellenization, so it can be seen in its stark terms as the denigration of reason. And then Benedict XVI says, very much like Thomas Aquinas, by the way, when he was approached by his fellow Dominicans, they said, how are we going to deal with these Muslims? And he said, well, you can't deal with them from their revelation because we don't accept it. And you can't deal with them from our revelation because they don't accept it. Therefore, you have to treat them as natural men, by which he meant through their reason.
Yes.
And this is exactly what the Pope is saying, that the only basis for dialogue is reason. And therefore, the future of dialogue will depend on the relative status of reason in the cultures that need to engage in this dialogue.
Right.
So he gave a solid warning about Islam, but then most of the book was the warning to the West that you too are losing logos, you too are denigrating reason and moral relativism and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Which eventually then leads to the acceptance of that asserting the will.
It's the primacy of the will, which we saw played out in the 20th century in Nazism and communism.
Yeah, yeah. Bob, thank you so much. Again, great work. And
great to be with you.
Robert Riley, The Closing of the Muslim Mind, How Intellectual Suicide Created the Modern Islamist Crisis. I'm Al Cresta.
Summer can be a bummer when your car's on the fritz. You like to take a vacation, but when you start your engine, it goes instead of... You'd love to take a road trip, but your brakes are broken, your muffler won't, and your differential is, well, indifferent.
Mm.
The good news is Fozzy Auto Repair can unfritz the fritzes. In other words, they'll battle the boink, unbroke the brakes, muzzle the muffler, differentiate the differential. Remember, Fozzy's is the home of the $16.99 oil change and free maintenance exams at 30, 60, and 90,000 miles. Fozzy's warranty their work for 12 months or 12,000 miles and are free local towing with all major repairs. Avoid the summer bummer and don't hit the road until your car is unfritzed and ready. Take it to Fozzy's Auto Repair. It's your car, their reputation. Stop and see Fozzy's on Stadium just south of Jackson Road or call toll-free 800-895-8700. Now doing auto detailing.
Do you or an aging loved one need assistance to remain as independent as possible in your home or assisted living residence? Are you concerned about the safety of a parent who is alone? Or do you just need a break from caring for a family member? If you find yourself in any of these situations, then you should contact Visiting Angels. Visiting Angels provides a compassionate, dignified, and respectful service that enables our clients to safely remain at home with services such as hygiene assistance, meal preparation, light housekeeping, and so much more. Our experienced and fully screened caregivers provide services up to 24 hours per day, and you help select your caregiver. Visiting Angels would be happy to provide a free in-home care and safety assessment as well. With over 400 offices in the U.S., we are America's number one choice in home care. To get more information or to schedule a free assessment, call 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE or visitingangels.com.
Fully Alive. Reflections on the scripture readings of today's Mass with Father Pat Egan, chaplain of Ave Maria Radio.
I'm speaking from Michigan, where we celebrate the Ascension this Sunday. So this is our first reading at Mass. Paul left Athens after his rejection there and went to Corinth. There he met a Jew named Aquila, who'd recently come from Italy with his wife Priscilla, because the Emperor Claudius had ordered all the Jews to leave Rome. He stayed with them and worked, for they too were tent makers. Every Sabbath he spoke in the synagogue, attempting to convince both Jews and Greeks that Jesus was the Messiah. When Silas and Timothy came down from Macedonia, Paul occupied himself totally with preaching, testifying to the Jews that the Messiah was Jesus. When they opposed him and reviled him, he shook out his garments, the classic sign of rejection, and said, "Your blood be on your own heads. From now on I will go to the Gentiles." So God turned their unbelief into our benefit. So he left there and went to the house of Titus Justus, who worshipped God. His house was next to a synagogue official, Crispus, who came to believe in the Lord along with his entire household. And many of the Corinthians believed and were baptized. One night, in a vision, the Lord said to Paul, "Do not be afraid. Go on speaking and do not be silent, for I am with you. No one will attack and harm you, for I have many people in this city." How different from the proud Athenians who had scorned him. Paul stayed many months there in this hustling, bustling seaport where humble people received the message of salvation. I'm Father Pat Egan, chaplain to Ave Maria Radio, commenting on the readings read today at Mass. Remember, inspired by the Word of God, you can be more fully alive.
child, Cresta. Joining me right now, Raymond D'Souza. He's Brazilian by birth, Catholic by grace, and Australian by choice. Raymond is the founder and director of the International Apostolate St. Gabriel Communications of Australia, South Africa, and the United States. And he promotes Catholic apologetics as a major tool for the new evangelization. You may well know him from his hosting on EWTN and as Program Director for Human Life International. He's coming to Southeast Michigan to speak at the June 11th Call to Holiness Conference, which, in fact, I'll be speaking at as well. But Raymond will be coming. This is coming up Saturday, June 11th. At Burton Manor Conference Center, and we'll have more information available to you at AveMariaRadio.net. Raymond's going to be speaking on de-Christianization and Catholic action in the 21st century. Raymond, it's great to have you back. Thanks.
Hello, I'm pleased to be back here. So, how is life?
It's fine. I mean, last time we saw each other, we were all running around here, and
yes,
I didn't get a chance to talk with you very long, but I'm glad that we're together now, and I'm looking forward to being with you on June 11th.
It's my pleasure, Alf, my pleasure.
So talk to me about your theme,
de-Christianization
and Catholic action.
This theme, first of all, of de-Christianization, is something I've been researching the last few years, based on some pontifical teachings from Pope Pius XI until Pope Benedict. Actually, this word, de-Christianization, was coined by Pius XI and used by Benedict several times in his addresses to various bishops' conferences in the world, especially when he spoke to the bishops of Germany. And he referred to this specifically to the cultural effects that is having, this process is having in the world today among Christian countries, when everything that is typically Christian is being removed in politics, in the economy, in culture, in every aspect. And I put a few thoughts together, which I have been giving this talk, I've given in several countries. I just came back from South Africa 5 days ago, where I addressed this issue in the Archdiocese of Johannesburg, Pretoria, and Cape Town. And we realized that it seems to be a concerted effort of virtually every government in the world to remove any mention of Christianity, especially in the process of promoting the culture of death, of the contraception, of abortion, euthanasia, homosexual marriage, gay fertilization, the whole thing. And then I talk about the Catholic action. What's our response to this? Are we going to be sitting ducks and letting these people destroy what is left of Christendom? Or how can you respond? And researching the various teachings of the popes, we came across with the program for the New Catholic Action, which is a threefold effort. One, prayer. Two, study. Three, action. Prayer, study, and action. That is complete the program of Catholic Action. In the area of prayer, we emphasize the rediscovery of the real presence of our Lord in the Holy Eucharist. To kneel down, to adore Jesus Christ. He's not a person who is only in heaven. He's in every single tabernacle of the Catholic Church. They rediscover also the devotion to Saint Michael the Archangel as the enemy of the satanic onslaught. And the Sacred Heart of Jesus. At this point in time, I'm giving a series of shows on EWTN on the 12 Problems of the Sacred Heart. Then study, we emphasize the necessity of the Catholic laity to learn Catholic apologetics. We must be equipped to defend the faith, to proclaim the faith, instead of just sharing our personal feelings as many times as it happens.
Right, right.
And the field of action, we zero in the fight against the culture of death. First things first, the right to life must be defended, and we shall never rest as long as abortion exists. There is a kind of a curse on the killing of innocent people. It's amazing how in our culture, people got used to this. Which I remember, for example, I was in South Africa a couple of weeks ago, and I learned about some satanic covens that sacrifice babies, and the people were shocked. I said, okay. It is very good to be shocked with this. But we kill thousands of them every year, and we're not so shocked. So being desensitized about the culture of death and the whole... Anyway, so this three-pronged approach of prayer, study, and action is what constitutes the Catholic action for the new millennium.
It seems to me that the laity will have to study in ways that they have not done in the past.
Yes.
I think in the past there's been a kind of a belief that we'd be carried along in some way by the culture. The culture would at least maintain basic confidence in reason or objective truth or objective morality. But you can't even count on those basic commitments any longer from the general culture.
Yes.
So we're going to have to really become recatechized
as
a laity.
Yeah, that's what Pope John Paul said in the book Crossing the Threshold of Hope. He said we must re-evangelize the baptized. That's why in our apostolate, St. Gilbert Communications, and I don't worry about the debate with Protestants, for example. No, I think I'm much more concerned with our own people. Now, see, I'm right now you're calling you from talking to you from my new office in the Diocese of Winona in Minnesota. The local bishop has just opened a new office for evangelization apologetics and invited me to be the director. So
very
you promote it concretely in this diocese. I'll be giving talks in every single parish of this diocese.
Excellent.
And the to revitalize, to make a little army of apprentice apologists.
Yeah.
And I use a particular method, Al, that it's in my website, RaymondSouza.com, which we use in Australia, which is a book produced by an Irish archbishop in the 40s, which went completely forgotten into oblivion, but it was updated in the Archdiocese of Sydney, and Cardinal George Pell launched this book in Sydney some years ago, and I was given the copyright, so I sliced the book into lessons, and I record CDs, and the people receive every month a CD with a lesson, a recorded talk, and a text, and we begin, as you just mentioned, begin with the objective truth, God's existence, divine revelation, divinity of Christ, all building up until the dogmas of the church, etc., etc.
Yeah.
So if people are interested, they pop by my website, RaymondDeSouza.com, and there's a course of apologetics there that can get information about this. Because what you said is very important. I agree with you 100%. People must realize we must discover new ways of learning the faith, to be carried away by the culture, even in parishes. Even in parishes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was talking to my bishop just a moment ago, Bishop John Quinn, and I was giving a report to him of my first couple of weeks here. And I mentioned to him this: we must cease to be a maintenance church and go back to be a missionary church.
Yes, yes. There's a wonderful book by that name, From Maintenance to Mission, I think.
Oh, really?
Father Rivers is the fellow who wrote it. Yeah.
Oh, great. Yeah. I learned this expression from a missionary in Japan. Who told me just that. The church in Japan, and to a large extent also in Australia, has ceased to be a missionary church, to become a maintenance church, to become kind of a holy janitors, who look after buildings. And of course, we welcome anybody who wants to come in. We welcome them. But you must reach out. And that's what I'm doing here in this diocese. Organize a team of young folks to do that.
You know, we have really been blessed in the papacies of John Paul II and now Benedict XVI in that both of these men have been master thinkers as well as great leaders and men of great holiness. But I think that the very fact that the Holy Spirit has chosen these two men to lead us over this last generation should indicate to us that rethinking the faith is on our agenda, has to be on our agenda, rethinking our catechesis, and because we've had two brilliant popes here.
And you see, from the same point of view, when you consider the lack of morals, for example, it's because the catechism has been superficial.
Yes.
If the idea is not clear, how are we going to put it into practice? I often quote a phrase by Pope John Paul when he was in Spain, 1981, addressing the Spanish youth, and he said this, quote, "You, young people, must learn to think, speak, and act in accordance with the evangelical simplicity and clarity. Yes, yes, no, no. You must learn to call black, black, and white, white, to call good, good, and evil, evil, to call sin, sin, and don't call it liberation or progress." Unquote. This kind of language we need today. Say it as it is, and many souls will be touched by divine grace with the clarity of the gospel.
I'm talking with Raymond D'Souza. He is founder and director of the International Apostolate St. Gabriel Communications of Australia, South Africa, and the United States. He's now also promoting Catholic apologetics in the Diocese of Winona in Minnesota. He will be present coming up June 11th at the Call to Holiness Conference in Burton Manor. Really, this is an outstanding opportunity for Catholics in the Southeast Michigan, Northern Ohio area to come by and get some great training. Raymond will be speaking there. Father McCaffrey will be speaking on the Message of Fatima. I'll be speaking on the American Catholic Council and dissent. Jeff Cavins will be there, Father Clement Machado, Paul Rondeau, and others. Also being the keynote speaker, I should mention, too, Janet Benkovic will be our keynote speaker. So we've got a lot happening coming up on June 11th, and I'd urge you to get a hold of calltoholiness.com. That's probably the quickest way to do it, calltoholiness.com. Where you'll experience a call to fidelity and the power of truth. Raymond, again, I'm looking forward to seeing you next week.
Okay, Al, great pleasure talking to you.
Okay.
Okay,
Raymond D'Souza.
Yeah.
We'll be seeing, be up together for the 13th Call to Holiness Conference coming up on June 11th. I'm Al Cresta. Thanks.
Is your son an overachiever and needs an intellectual challenge? Or do you have a son that needs to be motivated to excel? Parents, take a few minutes today to learn how sending your child to the University of Detroit Jesuit High School and Academy can challenge and motivate students to achieve their fullest potential. Visit their website at ufdjesuit.org or by calling 313-862-5400. The University of Detroit Jesuit High School and Academy, forming men for others since 1877.
Hi, I'm Al Cresta. The Napa Institute is a newly formed apostolate which exists to instill a new zeal for Jesus Christ in the Catholic faith and to help Catholics respond to the moral and spiritual challenges posed by America's emerging post-Christian culture. It's led by a roster of leading Catholics, including Father Robert Spitzer, Timothy Bush, Mark Brumley, Archbishop Charles Chaput, and more. The Institute promotes excellence in Catholic thought and apologetics. To accomplish this, the Napa Institute is holding its first annual conference, July 28th through 31st, at the Meritage Resort and Spa in Napa, California. Speakers will include Father Spitzer, Tim Gray, Archbishop Jose Gomez, Archbishop Alexander Brunette, George Weigel, Mother Assumpta Long, and more. Cresta in the Afternoon will be broadcasting live from the conference, and we want to see you there, July 28th through 31st in Napa, California. For more information and online registration, click on the Napa Institute banner at AveMariaRadio.net.
Summer season is here. At Michigan Motor Exchange, we want to make sure your boat, car, truck, or RV is ready for all your summer fun. Since 1945, Michigan Motor Exchange is your engine replacement and repair experts. So if your boat or vehicle engine is acting up or did not survive winter storage, we can get you back on the water or on the road for all your summer fun and travel. Visit Michigan Motor Exchange at michmox.com or call today 866-MICH-MOX.
Good afternoon. I'm Al Cresta. Coming up in the next hour, Rob Muse will be joining us with the Thomas More Law Center. He has just argued about the individual mandate in the Obama health care. The question is, of course, whether in fact you can pass a law that requires all Americans to have health insurance or to be penalized if you don't. So the question is that constitutional? and Rob will be arguing the case with us. Also coming up, a bill submitted to the U.S. Congress could bring an end to the work of all Catholic adoption agencies in the United States by requiring agencies to place children in the households of homosexual couples. This is incredibly frustrating to see, because the Catholic Church has been characterized as a place of hospitality. And one of the ways that we've been considered a place of hospitality is because of our work with orphans and our work with adoptive parents. So when you have, we've seen at the state level, in Boston, in Massachusetts, and recently in Illinois, we've seen Catholic ministries being forced to back away from adoption ministry and service because of this demand that they make release children to same-sex couples. Well, church can't do that in good conscience, and so they then effectively lose the ability to practice adoption services in these various states. We'll be talking this over with Tom McCluskey, Senior Vice President of Family Research Council, and we'll look forward to trying to see which way. This is going to have to be challenged. Up to this point, this has not been challenged in the courts, and I don't know why, but hopefully we'll see a challenge. Also, there's a number of new surveys of attitudes in the Muslim world towards the United States, and there was thought that this, what was being called the, quote, Arab Spring, that would somehow bring also an increased appreciation for liberties celebrated in the West and in the United States. These most recent surveys, though, published by the Global Attitudes Project of the Pew Research Center, seem to indicate that, no, the Arab Spring has not in any way helped refurbish the U.S. image among these Middle Eastern countries. We'll talk it over on the other side of the news break. I'm Al Cresta.
Would you like a copy of this program? If you miss a part of this program or want to hear it again, Ave Maria programming can be made yours when you order. Just call 734-930-4506. Within a few weeks, you'll receive a copy of this show and any others you want to order on CD. Call 734-930-4506.
Coming to the Lydia Mendelson Theater on the U of M campus is the hilarious musical Once Upon a Mattress, the story of the Princess and the Pea, performed by many Catholic students from the WDEO listening area, June 2nd through 4th. I'm director Jim Pinard. Our production team has brought together over 50 years of combined professional talent for less than the cost of a movie. You'll never look at fairy tales quite the same way again. Go to explorersdramaclub.org for more information. That's explorersdramaclub.org. The show is appropriate for all ages.
Light of the East, weekends on Ave Maria Radio.
I am Father Thomas Loya, and this week on Light of the East on Ave Maria, it's the Fathers of the First Ecumenical Council and the creed that both East and West say even to this day.
We believe in one God, the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth.
Saturdays at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday mornings at 7 on 990 WDEO.
Today's programming on 990 WDEO is made possible in part by our day sponsor, to announce the Michigan Home Educators Conference June 17th and 18th in Lansing. The conference features seminars for beginners and spiritual growth. For information, go to homeschoolcatholic.org.
You can have your own day on Ave Maria.